Welcome to IPC's podcast, Global Electronics, The Art of the Possible. I'm John Mitchell, podcast host and president and CEO of IPC, the global association that helps manufacturers build electronics better through proven standards, certification and training, advocacy, and industry intelligence. Digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world. We need to start talking about the policy, sustainability, network, and workforce adoptions integral to developing the factory of the future. We want to take a broad look at some of the opportunities and challenges of creating and running the factory of the future and talk one-on-one with the industry leaders and pioneers in manufacturing and management. Join us in exploring the factory of the future. I'm here with Sean Dubovac, IPC's chief economist. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
So maybe you could share a little bit of your background.
So I, as you noted, joined as IPC's chief economist as we build out that industry intelligence component and continue to be a resource, not just for industry, but more broadly, and speak for industry in other circles. I have spent many years at the intersection of technology and economics, and more broadly, how those two interplay. I spent over 12 years as the chief economist for the Consumer Technology Association, and before that, spent a lot of time in tech and looking at how, again, the interplay between economics and technology.
Great. So today we're talking about factories of the future and what type of technologies or influences will make those more of a reality going forward, or maybe more of a challenge. And so we've got a few questions that will hopefully spur some interesting conversation with us. Let me just jump right in here. What do you feel are the critical elements or standards or technologies that will enable or define the factory of the future?
I think when you look at the factory of the future, it's a lot about putting together dispersed pieces, dispersed components and elements, and sometimes that's equipment or individuals, and putting them together in a unique way. So my first book looks at this movement towards digitization, and that's kind of the first move as I see the factory of the future. It's starting to digitize and sensorize
Everything.
Yeah. Not just the equipment, but everything. And the way I see it is all of this information is already there. It's just not being captured, collected, organized, structured. And that's...
Leveraged in a way that we can take advantage of.
Yeah, and that's what we're starting to do now is capture all of the data. And the next big step is figuring out what do you want to do with that information? How do you want to redeploy that information? And I think there's some really big shifts that are happening. It isn't just about redeploying the data back into the manufacturing, but I actually think that this data as a byproduct will become a product for many of these organizations. That they'll
That's even happening today. I mean, how many companies are selling data to other folks, right?
Yeah.
Where they're accumulating this. So one of the challenges in that that I see is if we're taking all different kinds of dispersed information or people or equipment or data, how do we make sure that it's consistent enough that we can make sense of it or machines can make sense of it?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what we're doing now. First is clearly creating mechanisms for moving that information around, being able to get access to it. So that's, if you look at what IPC is doing with CFX, that's a big piece of that is creating the superhighway for information in the factory setting. And then I think the next big step is trying to ascertain what information is valuable, useful information, and what information is just an externality, is just a byproduct that you don't necessarily need.
Well, and the interesting thing is the those not needed products of today may turn out to be somebody else's sweet spot for tomorrow for some ancillary piece that we just haven't thought of.
But yeah, and I think we were in this period for the last decade where it was, as we digitize and sensorize, let's start to store all of this information. We're at a point now where, despite the fact that storage is very cheap, we are capturing more information than we really want to store for a long period of time. And so you're seeing things like AI at the edge and AI on the edge, which is all about using the information that you're capturing in real time to make decisions right at the point of that data capture.
When you're gathering it.
Yeah,
so
right.
So you don't have to store it forever and have just massive amounts that
exactly.
you can't deal with.
Yeah, so you don't have to store it and you can just use it, redeploy it, and then move on from there. I think to your point, there's probably still times where you're going to want to store that data because you may want it in the future. It may
you
be
just
useful.
You don't know.
You don't
yeah,
know,
yeah.
exactly.
And there may be a whole business about that, just saying, hey, we can encrypt data and push it off to somebody else that'll store it for us, kind of like the what's the document storage companies, the Iron Mountains of
right,
the world.
You yeah. know,
so you might have just the virtual Iron Mountains, if you will. And yeah. maybe they're already doing that.
And I think though, a lot of companies are coming into this space to help figure out what the data could be, how it could be used, how it should be used. Because data isn't really the core capabilities of a lot of these factories.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're bringing in strategic partners to really help make sense of it.
Well, and there may actually be a business opportunity that is ancillary to their main focus of building products, in that as they collect this data, if they tag it appropriately, saying, hey, this is data that's relative to this, I have no use for it, but if I can push it off here, someday somebody might want to buy that data, and it may have use for them. So I think the whole data thing is, that's a great point about it being critical, and then standardizing how we categorize it makes it useful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you think about AI kind of coming in, machine learning coming in, right, it's finding those patterns in all of the data that are difficult to decipher just by looking at the data, difficult to decipher as a human, if you will. But when right. we can apply some techniques to all of this data, we can hopefully learn new things.
Learn new things, yeah, things that we couldn't, patterns we just don't see.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So this next question is related to the data explosion that we're experiencing. And as we were saying, most companies don't know what to do with most of the data they're collecting today. What are some of the ways that you anticipate the manufacturing supply chain will actually harness the data?
So if you look at how they're going to use it now, I mean, first and foremost, it's about improving yields,
right.
Extending uptime, reducing downtime.
Efficiency.
Yeah, efficiencies, productivity, automation. So if you think about the way we're building these manufacturing lines, it's about can we take data in one part of the process and feed it back into another part of the process.
So that part gets better.
Yeah, so that part gets better and keeps everything, as you talked about, humming along. But I think there is probably this opportunity to use that data in other ways. I think part of the challenge is, again, these companies aren't thinking about those things. Factories are really primarily thinking about finished goods and,
right.
and at least physical goods, producing physical goods and delivering them to a customer within a very tight
time frame. Yep.
It's always much tighter than they want.
Yeah.
And so they're competing against these really hard deadlines and they're trying to get everything in. But I think that's where you'll start to see everything tie together a little more. I think of like a restaurant where you have the front of the house and the back of the house and they're not really talking to each other. So somebody takes an order at the table, they submit that to the kitchen, but that isn't necessarily, that POS information isn't necessarily being incorporated into inventory management or marketing or some of these other things. So you don't know necessarily, the marketing department may not know what was the most popular item on a Friday night or what's the most popular item when it rains.
But if they did,
then
suddenly given conditions, they could change what they're doing. I also think of in the factory, another way they might be able to utilize the data in the factory is in terms of just optimizing the factory layout. I mean, so we have
Definitely.
Robots, you know, and with this data, you could sit there and say, okay, as we improve efficiencies here, really you can learn. It is still an efficiency game, but can you imagine getting a floor layout coming out of your system saying, actually, if we change the layout this way, now suddenly you have more capacity in your factory so you can actually build more, you know, or double
yeah.
this, you know, through these pods. So, yeah, I think
that's a great example. And you can, if you're optimizing even the physical layout of your lines,
mm-hmm.
then you don't need to expand your footprint when you want to expand your lines or your resources.
Right.
And so you're able to grow without having to put
more capital investment.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Very good. All right, so as we talk about artificial intelligence and robotics and those greater efficiencies that they can help yield in factories, they may also disrupt labor markets. So knowing this, what new skills do you think will be needed to run smart factories? Or what should the industry be doing to upskill their current workers?
Clearly, there's skills that will be needed and tasks that will evolve and change the workforce. I think first and foremost, it's a mind shift that's needed. It's a different type of thinking about these processes. So to your point, or just a minute ago, where you're talking about the physical layout of the factory is going to change as we deploy this data in new ways, you need individuals who can think about those type of changes being possible.
Yeah. As opposed to just saying, oh, I'm going to get this faster, think, oh, I might change my thing. And, you know, you take that another one. Maybe I can attach these machines to the ceiling, you know, and now I've got more space, you know, or whatever. So just, out of the box thinking is, so we need to, what I'm hearing you say is that we need to get, one of the skills we need to train in is the idea to be more open-minded.
Yeah, create. So if you think about what's happening, we're automating routine tasks, which means we're left with non-routine tasks, and non-routine tasks tend to require a lot of cognitive skills. Regardless of where you are in the income distribution,
right. It
still requires
more brain power.
Yeah, more brain power to work.
Creativity, what have you.
Exactly. And so those are the type of skills that we're going to want to focus on, are these ones that require a high degree of cognitive capabilities. And it's exactly as you noted, it's creativity, it's out-of-the-box thinking, it's being able to observe a situation and pick up some of the nuances.
Yeah, innovate based on the facts you're given at the time, because they aren't just always the same facts.
Yeah, and you think that a lot of jobs were designed to optimize situations. And if you think of a lot of professional services, accountants were designed to optimize your tax structure or your investment allocations. So as we can start to automate some of those type of routine automation and optimization skills, then we're going to need to look for more creative out-of-the-box approaches.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, the creativity. If you think back to how Henry Ford took the idea of, you know, hey, we'll just do one job at the same time, all that, and that was an optimization at the time, but maybe now that's exactly what's inhibiting some of that creativity, is that, oh, all I can do is optimize this one job, instead of thinking, now I need to think system-wise or, you know, productivity-wise, you know, pull it all in. The more factors you can pull in at the same time to a problem also offers more degrees of creativity and innovation.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because if you look at electronics manufacturing, especially in the U.S., a lot of it is high mix, low volume, and so you're hurt by having to switch things up. So if there are ways, and that right now is a very cognitive requirement.
Oh, it's heavy cognitive task. Very good. Yeah, excellent. So we're going to upskill workers by helping them become more creative and thinking out of the box. Are there any basic skills that you feel, or how do we, if we're going to disrupt the labor market, so say, let's just think about AI and robotics for just a moment here. Obviously, a robot's going to run 24/7, and most workers are not. So if we're displacing workers, are there specific skills as this becomes more and more prevalent that you feel like or have any input on that people should be thinking about, oh, my job might get replaced, what should I be doing?
Yeah, so when I look at what's happening in the world today, I see, we talk a lot about the gig economy. And this idea of the gig economy is that you have individuals that are coming in and out of the workforce, essentially, on a daily basis. They'll come in and out and they'll do different jobs based upon any number of factors, preferences, time of day, other activities that are happening in that environment. As we automate some of the things within a factory and we make that truly a smart, connected, automated environment, what you're going to end up doing is scaling that individual across the factory. So in other words, you'll be scaling individuals across more tasks. So in the way the gig economy has redefined the broader economy, I think a gig worker will also redefine what's happening inside of a factory. They'll have to do more things across the entire line or more things within that factory. So that's one.
So it's, I'm not just a cog in the wheel. I'm several cogs in the wheel.
Yes. Yeah. You're going to be moving around and being very aware of all that data flowing in, because there's still going to be a lot of things that will need to be done by a human that are best done by a human, and they're going to have to be able to rapidly shift between those different jobs. I also think that as we move from digitization to datafication, that we all become data scientists. So that the job of the future, regardless of whether you're in HR for a manufacturer, you're an operator, an engineer, it doesn't matter anymore. We're all data scientists.
And so if you're going to take a night class at your community college class, learn how to understand and utilize data.
Yeah, to just be, to think about it, to have a mindset that can fully take advantage of the data that's available.
Very good. All right. So again, I'm going to shift directions on you here just a little bit. How can the industry support the idea of sustainable development, both green and long-term, setting success in the long run in terms of workforce, technology investment, and infrastructure? So as we're rethinking what we develop in terms of sustainability, and then please feel free to work in the economic angle of this, you know, globally, because one of the concerns I have about this is, and we've heard this in a few of our other interviews, is we all want to live in a world that's clean, you know, that we don't want to drink poison, we don't want to breathe poison, but there's a motivation factor that is either customer-based or financial-based. How do we overcome those or drive those in such a way that we actually drive the sustainability up?
Yeah, so I do think that from a demand side, that the younger generation and this has been true across history, that younger generations, as they come into the purchasing power, have a greater propensity to spend on things that are environmentally friendly, and they become more aware of scarce resources. And so I think that's especially true with the generation that's coming up today, and you can just look at, you know, we're putting them on the cover of Time magazine. There's a really strong focus on having a zero footprint.
Zero environmental footprint, zero impact
on the environment. And so you're seeing that across the board. I see it in automotive, where they're talking about organic materials and vegan interiors. You see the move
toward...
you see the move...
When you say that, I think, oh, it's edible. All right.
That's right. you see the move towards electrification across the board. And I think that's a move towards sustainability. And that now these... are long shifts. We're talking 10 and 20 year shifts that are taking place.
So we're not going to see this sustainability driven happen by 2021 necessarily, but we'll see the beginnings, and we're already seeing the beginnings of the buyers.
Definitely.
As they come up, you know. So most of our largest group right now, I think millennials have finally overtaken the boomers. And so now with that power structure, and they are in the purchase zone of their lives.
That's right. They're in the workforce. They're fully integrated in the workforce. They're now forming households, and so they're buying homes. They're buying vehicles. They're spending on...
Or they're not buying vehicles.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're spending on services, and so they're thinking a lot about the environmental impact of their decisions. And so I think... you've got that happening on the demand side. You also have regulation across the board. You see it most pronounced in Europe right now, where they're really enforcing. China is also doing a lot around environment. So I think that those two forces are going to really dictate a lot of the...
And help drive the customer requirements, either at the end or at the regulatory side, to make sure that we, as an industry, have to... accelerate our sustainability efforts.
Yeah, one of the great things about that is that you'll start to get to critical mass, and that's when some of these economies to scale kick in, and that's what will really benefit manufacturers. I don't think manufacturers are opposed to any of this.
Right, but just got to make sense fiscally.
That's right, and having volume will help the numbers work.
Right, so if I'm a small manufacturer and there's a way for me to be sustainable, but it's going to drive 10% increase in my costs, that's going to sink me. I'm going to be out of business.
Right.
Whereas as larger manufacturers or some of these forces are felt and those things become more mainstream, now suddenly that cost of changing is not so difficult.
Yeah. And in fact, in order to capture a piece of that market, you're going to move in that direction.
Right.
And so I think what you'll see is all of these forces will work together to push us in that direction. Also, the technology has improved. So if we think about moving towards electric vehicles or, right. or you know, electric anything, really.
Data throughputs are going through the roof. And as 5G comes out, everybody's going to have just amazing access to data. So if we can now collect that data, you run into privacy concerns, but collecting that data will also, I think, inform where we need to be doing things to become more sustainable
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think a lot of forces are coming together to define the next decade.
Very good. All right, so last question. What do you think we as an industry should be talking about more but aren't?
That's a great question. When I'm here at APEX and looking at everything that's happening at APEX, and I see a lot of really great things. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome to see how the industry is growing. The things that I would point to, like being able to incorporate data into processes you're seeing happen, I think there's still an underestimation of how widely deployed sensors will be and how okay. impactful that will be. And and so I think we're going to, we need to even ramp up farther where we think data will be deployed and how we as an industry can employ that data in our own individual businesses.
So while we recognize it, we are not understanding exactly how groundbreakingly changing this will be in terms
yeah.
of the data collection as well as the use of that data.
Yeah, and also what the data ends up...
We get it, but we don't really get it.
Right. So so here's an example. The data ends up, and you see it with standards like CFX and other things like that, enables machines to more easily and more accurately talk together. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is all of a sudden, companies that might not have been able to work together very closely or very tightly because they had different machines speaking different languages mm-hmm. can now be more fully integrated within a client's facilities. And so
cross-industry sharing of information.
Exactly. Yeah. The collaboration and partnerships that are being created today are going to be much bigger and larger than we've ever seen. And so companies need to start thinking about it isn't just building the best product, mm-hmm. but it's also building a product that accomplishes things in conjunction with all of these other products from companies that might have been competitors in the past, and now we're partnering to create all new solutions and all new services for our clients.
Yeah, it's a whole different way of thinking.
Yes, definitely.
Very good. Sean, thank you for giving us your time and insights. I really appreciate it and helping us understand a little bit better what the Factory of the Future might hold for this industry. You can also find more information on the Factory of the Future and other electronics industry news at ipc.org.